702. Change your mindset.
Yeah, let's change our mindset, because if we change our mindset about something, that something changes. Stanley Beckett is here, author and consultant at Change Creator SA. Stanley, good evening to you, man. Are you well?
Yeah, good evening, Aubrey. All well, thank you too. And yeah, like I said, good evening to you and all the listeners.
It feels like ages since I last spoke to you, man.
Have you been? It does.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Tell you, I had a conversation last week with Michael Lee about paradox. Yeah? And the need for deliberately learning the principles of creativity in order for us to start developing the mindsets that are going to give us solutions rather than the regurgitation of the very same thinking and mindsets that gave us the problems. Some great conversation, man. Some really, really wonderful conversation. I've got to thank you for that, because I don't think I would have gotten come across Michael Lee, who's really giving us some food to think of, if it hadn't been for you. So thank you very much for that, Stanley. Tonight, you want to speak about a burning desire? What?
Yeah, well, you know what this feature is all about, Aubrey. It's about changing the way we look at things and changing the way we think about things. I'm going to be open with you. I was a little bit nervous about tonight's conversation, because it's the one part of what, when we explain how change takes place. I think this is one of the parts that people find the most difficulty in understanding, because it's so different from what we've been taught.
Yeah.
And but I'm actually glad to do it on the show, because I know you'll use your unique talent again to verbalize it in a way that hopefully many more can understand the principle that we want to bring into tonight. But I was thinking, perhaps before we go there, you know, what we always like to do in the show is maybe just have a preview of what's come before, so that it helps to understand where we're positioning what we're talking about tonight.
Right.
So if you remember, we're talking about two sides. We started off, and the theme of this year really is the one side of the coin we don't talk a lot about, and that's grit. What is grit? What does it mean to have grit? And why is it so important in life today to develop this thing called grit? But then I realized you can't really understand grit properly if you don't understand the other side of the equation, which is commitment. So what we've been doing is we've been unpacking what does it mean to really be committed? Because, as we said, everybody would like to think they're committed towards their goals in life and towards what they want. But when we start understanding what commitment really is, then we start understanding there's a lot more to it than we thought. So what we've been doing in the last few months is unpacking all the different variables that make up commitment.
Yeah.
And hopefully through that, we have a deeper understanding of what commitment is. I mean, if you remember back a few months ago when you and I were discussing commitment, it's a really difficult thing to define on its own. What does it really mean to be committed? So the hope was that as we start explaining the different aspects of it, we understand it better. And we started off by first saying you can see it sequentially, but it doesn't have to be sequentially. You'd rather see it as different elements of that make up a cake. You know, like if you're going to bake a cake, you've got your different ingredients, and sometimes those ingredients have to be put in a certain order for to produce the cake. But at the end of the day, you still need all of the ingredients. If you're going to make a cake and you're going to leave out the flour,
yeah,
or you're going to leave out the eggs, then you're not going to have a cake that's going to be successful. And what happens many times is that people go on the self-study route and the self-education route, and they'll learn different aspects of a thing like commitment, but they'll miss an important ingredient out. And then they'll be frustrated, wondering, but why aren't things changing for me? And then what we tend to do is we tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, no, this is all rubbish. But, you know, it's because we don't understand all the different elements. So what we looked at is the elements, if you remember, just to quickly recap. The very first element to real commitment is the energy, the space that you're coming from when you are going for something, when you're committing towards something. If you remember, we spoke about the difference between coming from an energy of desperation compared to an energy of deserving.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, desperation is what majority of people feel because, it's, you know, more and more, even now, more than before. You know, people are desperate to find money. You know, money is becoming in shorter supply. People are having to cut more and more. And they're coming more from a space of desperation, which can feel the same as the other side. The other side of it is deserving. Deserving is something that goes much deeper. Deserving is something when you know you've done everything you possibly could to get something. And you've put in all of your effort, and you know it's just a matter of time before your time has come. And that's a completely different type of space.
Yeah.
Now, it was interesting. I heard you talk about a young person that you were saying was saying earlier on, you know, they've done everything they were taught to do.
Yeah.
Gone through their years of school, done everything they were taught. They're coming from a space maybe of being deserving, right? And they could be sitting and saying, okay, but why isn't it happening for me?
Right.
And the reason being because it's more than just that. That's just one of the elements.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we move on to the next element. And the next element was all about, really, I think in a nutshell, was about taking responsibility for where you are in your life and not blaming anybody or anything else.
Yeah.
So it's not coming from a space of victim. It's coming from a space of saying, it doesn't matter what got me to where I am today. The fact of the matter is, here I am. That goal is what I need. I need a job. I need money. I need whatever it is. And as long as I'm sitting in a space of blaming, as long as I'm sitting in a space of not taking responsibility for where I currently am, it doesn't matter what got you there. You then also, you cannot fully commit to something because then it's always somebody else's fault.
That point right there is so important. Because taking responsibility for where you are is not necessarily taking blame for you where you are. I think that's so critically important, Stanley. And I don't know whether it's just a matter of language, or an inability, perhaps because some of us English isn't our first language, to really make sure that principle is clearly understood, that when I take responsibility, I'm not necessarily taking blame. I'm not taking the responsibility that is accusative. I'm taking responsibility of the fact that I'm going to be the person that needs to take myself out of that situation, regardless of how I got into it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're saying, is that you know, it's sitting in a situation, and let's take many of our youth right now. You know, I really feel for the youth because so many of our youth, and I don't know if I'm wrong, Aubrey, so please tell me if I'm wrong, but I actually was told by someone today that the youth unemployment is sitting at somewhere 60% already.
Yeah.
Right? The fact of the matter is that's a fact. Whether we like it or don't like it, whether it makes us angry or not, the fact of the matter is that is the reality we are having to face.
Yeah.
So you can sit in that reality and you can blame, you can point finger, and you're absolutely justified to do that. So please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you don't have the right to do that. But what we're saying is as long as you're sitting in that space, you are in the story, we call it, the story of what's happening. And change doesn't happen in the story of what's happening. Whatever is the reason that got us to where we are today is the reason, but it's not going to get us forward. Each person has to individually sit up and say, what am I going to do? This is my situation. I need to find a job, or I need to create an income, or I need to do something that's bringing money in for myself. And regardless of what's happened or why the situation is or what the situation in the country is, each person has a responsibility to look at themselves and say, what can I do in my capacity to start creating the change I want? So that's what we call the...
I wish, Stanley, and pardon me again.
Yeah, no,
I think that is so, 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 so critical. That is so critical. And I wish I had the language to speak it, because I think it's probably the biggest impediment to change. that we sometimes get ourselves into this frenzy of wanting to justify why I am correct in blaming. And the reality is that you are not wrong. You are correct. But that is not going to help you out of the problem. It requires a different revelation, a different thinking, a different approach that says, yes, the reasons for why you are in the situation that you are in now, in terms of blame, that person is to be blamed. But you are responsible for getting out of that situation, regardless of who is to blame. And I don't know how we can shout it sufficiently, speak it sufficiently to bring that realization to our minds, to say that saying that you are not wrong to blame, but you must take responsibility to get out of the circumstance that whoever is to blame put you in is still your responsibility. That, for me, is a crucial understanding to get, because without it, nothing is going to change. So,
exactly.
So maybe let's do this. I know we're going to continue, but I'd like for our listeners to call in on 011-883-0702 to help me get a sense of whether you're getting that. Because that's the thing. That's all of the other stuff that comes after that is technique. But and maybe not technique, but yeah, I'm happy to go with technique. But this is the crucial thing that says the change in your circumstances is going to come with the embracing of the personal responsibility for coming out of that situation. That does not mean that you are to blame. Please give me a call. I'd love to hear you, whether you get that, because it's critical, folks. It's the critical thing here. As I speak to Stanley Beckett, author and consultant at Change Creator, please give me a call on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It is the responsibility of the woman who finds herself in a bad, toxic, violent relationship to get herself out of there. It might not be her fault. She might not be to blame for being in those circumstances, but it is her responsibility to develop the thinking, to develop the mental muscle and emotional muscle to extricate herself out of that thing. It's her responsibility. It's not her to be blamed, but it is her responsibility. Please give me a call. I know it's sensitive. I know that it can be misinterpreted, misconstrued, but it is the most critical part, I think, of this conversation. Sorry, Stanley. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah, I think the word you use there is very important, Aubrey, responsibility. You know, and hopefully the listeners can hear that we're not saying that they are wrong. They are right. There's been a lot of injustices in the past. Nobody can deny that. And this isn't about hiding the injustices of the past. But this is about saying, okay, so now what? Right? Whatever got us here today, whatever got us in this situation, and I know you're going to have many people that are going to blame the current government, but you know what, Aubrey, it doesn't matter who you blame. You can blame the government, you can blame Russia for attacking the Ukraine, you can blame the Chinese for creating a virus that completely messed up our whole economy. I mean, they really, if you want to go into that mode, there's so many people you can blame, so many different things you can blame. But here's the thing, none of that is going to change your situation.
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to change your situation is if you say, this is the situation, what am I going to do about it now?
Yeah.
In other words, you need to go and find something to commit to that is going to advance you, not that's going to keep you stuck where you are. Many people are committed to a fight that's taking them nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, many people are committed to a fight that's just the same thing that we are rehashing all the time.
Yeah.
And again, I want to say, I'm not unsympathetic to the cause and the hurt that's been caused. But what I'm saying is maybe it's time to commit to something different. That's maybe what we need to be teaching our youth. To commit to something real, to commit to something and saying, okay, what do we need to happen? And it's time for us all to stop pointing fingers at each other. It's time for us all to stop blaming each other and to realize that the only way we can move forward is if we start taking the responsibility, the easiness of the situation, and say, look, there's a serious problem with unemployment in this country, especially amongst our youth. It's a ticking time bomb. We need to do something about it. Let's stop. We can always readdress the past in the future again and talk about it. But for right now, I think the easiness is probably one of the most important things we can talk about. So that was the second thing.
So give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. As I speak to Stanley Beckett, he is author and consultant at Change Creator. Sorry, Stanley, you were going to say?
No, you carry on.
All right, because I've got a few...
Even if we just pause on this point tonight, I'm happy.
Sure.
It's such a big point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe we'll get into that issue of...
A burning desire,
because I'm really looking forward to that. I really, really, really hear you on that responsibility versus blame thing, because and here's the thing. Once the priority is to get a solution, whatever it is that you blame becomes very secondary. If the mindset is to blame, right? And as important as it is, because I think it's important to know where the source of your problems come from, right? But once you've decided to take responsibility for how you get out of that problem, the thing or person or circumstance that you blame no longer has the kind of power over you that it used to have, because you now have a different priority. You now have a different project, different goal to achieve. Yeah,
I like the way you put it there, Aubrey, and that's so true. It's changing the focus from responsibility, from blame to responsibility. And I don't think there's a single person in this country that's not aware of our history. I don't think there's a single person that's not aware. And look, there's still many people who are not taking responsibility as they should for it. But the fact of the matter is, are those conversations really moving us forward? Have they really moved us forward in the last 10 years? And I would argue to say, no, it hasn't. If you look at how much worse the unemployment is, how much worse the economy is, how much worse so many other things are, and we're still having the same conversations we had 20 years ago. The conversation needs to change. We need to really be getting together, not not waiting for government. That's another story. You know, people who are sitting around waiting for government to change everything, they don't have the power to do that. And then let's get into the easiness of the situation, right? The idea that the government is suddenly going to be able to change everybody's lives around is a story. It's not the easiness. It's not the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is we have to do this for ourselves. But here's the problem. We're not empowering our youth to think that way, because we're still getting them to focus on the past, on the story, on the things that went wrong. And as long as we're doing that, our poor youth are sitting there getting more and more frustrated, more and more anxious, and we need to be having these kind of real conversations and saying, listen, now what do we do about it? How do we empower our youth to be able to start building their own businesses, to start making themselves more employable? To say, okay, the situation right now is that I've been, for example, let's say if I'm a youth, I've been disadvantaged. But guess what? So is millions of others in exactly the same situation as what I am in. So we can either all sit around and keep blaming and keep pointing fingers, or we can stand up and say, okay, now what are we going to do about it? In other words, we need to give our youth something to commit to other than blame. I hope that makes sense.
I think it does. I was having a conversation about the nutrition crisis around our children. Children from 0 to 5 are malnourished in this country. And of course, those will be the poor children, not the rich children. You know, and I was speaking to somebody, and that person wanted us to have a march, to have a big march. And okay, you know, I suppose it's okay. You know, it'll bring about some awareness, and there'll be a conversation. But I don't know whether we can still afford lots of marches anymore. Or, you know, I'm getting the sense that we need to do something that's going to solve that problem. Sitting around and talking about how government has abdicated its duty on, sure, and I don't disagree with that analysis, but the problem persists. The malnutrition problem persists. I talk to somebody who is in a bad relationship, and I say, you know, are you going to stay in that relationship? And that person says to me, we have to sit down and talk about this on your show. Sure, no problem. I'm happy for us to have a conversation on my show. But do you realize that you're going to continue to be unhappy? What are you going to do about that? And I think that is the mind shift that you're talking about, to say, how do we solve the problem? If your life requires a particular change, I'm happy to talk about the analysis of it. But what are we doing about changing that situation so that you are no longer in that space of suffering? I am happy to have that conversation. And that's the urgency that I'm feeling these days, that if we don't do this, then we shouldn't be surprised when this thing explodes in our face, because we have not been looking for the solution. I want to go to the calls now. Please give me a call. 011-883-0702. I promise you we're going to get to a burning desire in a few moments' time. Mosa is in Stellenbosch. Hi, Mosa.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that when you were talking about blame and taking responsibility and looking for a solution,
yeah,
I sort of... a session that I had just this week with an academic counselor, because he's on laugh at me. I'm doing a module that I'm repeating for the third time.
Mm.
And when I got my marks yesterday and I found that I'd failed the module yet again, and I had a session with her, and she was like, yeah, but the one thing that I've noticed about people is that when they're in this situation, they sort of think, oh, I'm doing this module for like the second or the third time, so I don't need to work hard. And I could tell that she was sort of blaming me for failing when I was approaching her for a solution.
Mm.
So sometimes the problem is that the people that you approach to seek help from will
victim blame.
At you. Yeah, and you're saying, look, I understand that I'm in a difficult position right now. I need help. And I think you are the right person that can help me. What can we do so that I get myself out of this situation? And then they point the finger right back at you, and you're like, okay, but what should I do next? Because I think I've done everything that I possibly can. And I'm looking to you for help, yet you are blaming me.
Yeah.
And I was also just reminded of the fact that when I started struggling with my studies, one of the things that really, really helped me back was the fact that I didn't have money for a consultation with a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
So I was having lots and lots and lots of therapy, but it had gotten to a point where it was not producing any results anymore because I needed a psychiatric intervention.
Yeah.
And I got myself to a public health facility. I put myself on the waiting list. I got a call from the psychologist at the facility, I think 6 months after I had been on the waiting list. And then he said to me, oh, I'll contact you to schedule an appointment, a screening appointment, before we can book you in to see the psychiatrist. And I never heard from him ever since.
So can I tell you a quick story?
Can I tell you
a quick story? It's not as serious as yours, but you might catch the thread. It took me 8 times to get my driver's license. So I went and failed 7 times.
Okay.
But I had been driving. I'd been driving quite competently on our roads without a license for, like, I don't know, for 4 or 5 years, right? And then
what's the problem?
So now listen to the story, because I think you might see something. So I kept on failing because there were certain minor but extremely important things that I wasn't doing that kept on facilitating my failure. Right?
Mm.
So I could parallel park without even looking at my mirrors, and I'd want to demonstrate to the, what do they call the guy? The guy that's with you, you know, I'd want to demonstrate to him that, look, man, I can do this with my eyes closed, right? Because I could, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I kept on failing. And I couldn't understand that, look, man, I can drive. I drove myself here. What's your story, man? Just give me the license, right? And then I got to understand more so that they are not impressed with my impressedness with myself. There is a specific compliance that they are looking for that will give me the pass. A specific one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And for when I failed the sixth or seventh or fifth or sixth time, I'd already started a whole story and conversation about how this system is just useless. How this system of attaining competency and a license is completely useless. Look at me, I can drive, and they keep failing me, and it's the system and all of those kinds of things. When in fact I had not humbled myself to understanding that in order for me to get the license, I need to be able to do the test as I'm required to do by the invigilation process. And
okay.
And so when I sat with my friends who knew I could drive and you know, my friends, we started a story about how the system is useless and how in fact the whole thing is just rigged against us. And in fact, it's nothing but white monopoly capital trying to keep us down. you understand what I'm trying to say? When in fact, if I had just said, okay, Orbs, stop the demonstrations and the variations and the splits, man. Stop the flexing, right? And just do what's required of you. You'll get the license.
Yeah.
When I came to that place, Musa, right? And I understood that just look at the mirrors 3-4 times. Hold your steering wheel at, 10 to 2, right? Do what is expected of you in terms of the rules. I got my license. And the guy said, why didn't you do this all this time? I was so preoccupied with flexing, with performing, with trying to show that I can do this thing. Now, this is my story. The point I'm trying to make, the point I'm trying to make, Musa, is this.
Mm-hmm.
That it was my responsibility to get to that place in my mind where I could do the minimum that would get me the license and leave the flexing. It was my responsibility to get to that place. I had been around buddies and chommies where it mattered to flex and to show off, right? But to the instructor or the guy that gives you the license or whatever, that was irrelevant. And so many times reality is not interested in your story. It's not interested in your story. Reality just doesn't give a damn about your story. Do what is supposed to be done. So what am I saying to you? I'm saying this. At some point.
I'm listening.
At some point.
Mm-hmm.
The person you went to try and get the help and what they said to you is irrelevant.
Okay.
What is important is Musa's prioritization of the fact that she must pass this module.
She must.
And Musa understanding that she must do whatever it takes, regardless of what that person says or that other person says. But Musa, must take the responsibility of saying, I hear that this person is saying this to me about my performance and whatever, but it's irrelevant. Tell me what I need to do for me to get this thing done. Because you're not stupid. You're definitely not stupid. But what you may be, but you may be suffering from is the idea that you want to hear something that is more Musa-centric. And I'm saying to you that that's not going to come from outside. It's going to come from Musa.
Can you repeat that?
What you might be suffering from, the thing that might be keeping you back, is uh-huh. that you might be waiting for somebody from outside of yourself to tell you what you need to do to get to pass this thing. And I'm saying to you that you might wait forever.
Okay.
That thing is going to come from you.
Okay, I'll
be with
you
soon. Musa in Stellenbosch, thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated. Jerome is in Cape Town. Hi, Jerome.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jerome. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is my spam email.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to check. I'm getting about 5-10 emails a day from people that's got my details from the government central supply database. So if you're a company, you've got to register yourself on the CSD, what's called the CSD.
Yeah.
That's a public record. Okay. These unscrupulous people have access to your details. They've got access to your email address, your telephone number, your company registration number, your VAT number, everything. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting about 5-10 emails a day from these people. And even though I market as spam through my internet services provider, I keep on getting the same emails. So what do I stand to do as a company? And it's not only unscrupulous people that's pretending, for instance, to say that from the
Okay. Jerome, what has that got to do with the topic that we are busy with right now?
A mandate is to protect us. Okay. So what I'm saying is, how does this protect the consumer?
Who's supposed to protect you?
Emails.
So I'm really confused, Jerome. We're talking about something completely different. So maybe another show?
No, it's not another show. Yeah. While you have an honor, I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone.
Have who on?
You're getting emails left, right, and center from people pretending to be from Abster, pretending to be...
Jerome in Cape Town, I think it's completely the wrong show. Stanley, your thoughts, man?
My thoughts will be.
Sorry.
I think we went a little bit off track there. But,
yeah, I think it was a completely different show that he's responded to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I actually want to share with you quickly my story. I think when you were sharing your story, I wanted to share one with you that hopefully will help hit the point for many of our listeners.
Yeah.
Many years ago, I went to the UK. We went there and I got a 2-year visa to go and work there. I had studied in IT, and I was quite well versed in IT. And I thought, I was told, firstly, when I went over, that there's many good jobs for IT. Then I'll show you how these things start. When I got there, the people we stayed at, they told me, "Well, you're a foreigner, and you're in IT, and it's very hard to find a job in IT as a foreigner in the UK."
Yes.
So immediately I bought into that story. So what happened, that started becoming my story. Now, when we believe a story, when we buy into a story, our mind then starts creating or proving the truth of that story.
Yeah, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, yeah.
Yes, it becomes our story. It becomes our current reality. So what was happening, Aubrey, is that this became my reality. I was sending my CV out
to many places. I was making phone calls. People weren't coming back to me. I was sending my CV. I wasn't getting a job. Eventually, I started becoming angry. I started saying, but this whole system is set up against foreigners.
Yep.
You know, they get you over here as a foreigner. You bring all your money with for a two-year visa. They take all your money, and then they send you home with a tail between your legs, because
yep.
that was the story I was being told.
Yep.
And I just couldn't find a job anywhere.
Yeah.
And then the day that it suddenly changed for me is that luckily there was somebody, because, you know, some of these British, they can be very straightforward.
Yeah.
And there was someone who was very straightforward to me. I phoned him and I said to him, listen, I've sent my CV. I've already phoned. This is the second, third, fourth time I've sent the CV. Why is nobody getting back to me? And he said, just wait a minute, let me look. And he went online and I heard him typing, came up with my CV. He looked at it. He says, oh, yes, I remember this. He says, sorry, mate, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but your CV is rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. You're never going to get a job with a rubbish CV like that. And he put the phone down. And you know what, although in that moment I was angry and I was hurt, but for the first time I was in the easiness of the situation, not the story of the situation.
Yeah.
The easiness was that my CV was rubbish. The easiness was that if I wanted to go onto an international stage, I needed to have a professional CV done. I needed to speak about my skills in the same way that every other person who was going for that same job was doing.
Yeah.
But because I was in my story, and my story was they biased against foreigners, especially South Africans. I then convinced myself that it was because I was South African, and yet the British were against South Africans.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in that story, you're never going to move ahead.
Yeah.
Right? And hopefully many of our youth listening to this can.
And by the way,
I'm trying to make.
And by the way, right? It becomes irrelevant whether it's true or not, right?
Yeah, I wasn't getting a job, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, as soon as I realized where the problem was, the easiness of the problem, and I actually spent a week with a professional fixing up my CV, it wasn't a week later and I started getting job interviews all over the place. You see, as long as I was in the story of the situation, I was not going to move ahead. And too many of our youth right now are in the story of how the situation, and that's why they're not moving ahead. That's why I'm saying we need to have these real conversations, and we need to be able to say, where's the problem? If you're not getting an interview, it's because your CV is not good enough. If you are getting interviews but you're not getting the job, it's because your interview skills need to be improved. If you are good at that but you're still not getting the job, maybe your skills need to be improved. But if you can't go to where the problem is, the easiness of the situation, you cannot turn it around. And that's why we're saying it's so important to move out of story and into the easiness of the situation.
We haven't even gotten to the what?
I think that's going to have to be for next week.
The burning desire. We haven't even gotten to the burning desire. Let me see if I can say what I take away from this conversation as we come to an end. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. If the focus is to change, if the purpose is to change your circumstances, yeah, you're in a bad relationship and it's not working, and you don't want to be in that bad relationship anymore, it doesn't matter how well you explain the situation that you're in or analyze it. It really doesn't matter, because that doesn't change it. But if the purpose is to change it, then the priority must be to change the circumstance that you are in. And I think what we are beginning to see is that sometimes we hamstring ourselves. We sabotage ourselves because we get caught up in the analysis, however brilliant it might be. But if it doesn't facilitate the change, it becomes irrelevant. And in fact, it might be contributory to your continued suffering. So there's nothing wrong with having a conversation about, Chris, you're the one that hit me with the hammer over the head. but it's not going to help me to stand in the same position while you, Chris, are getting ready to hit me again. Only to prove that it is Chris that hit me. You're going to get out of the way. Yeah? I think it's that simple, isn't it? So I'm hoping that next week we'll be able to break into the issue of what do you call it? The desire, Stanley? The burning desire.
We'll explain what that is on the next show. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. How do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so again, Aubrey, the invitation has always been there. If people wanted to get into the business of life, come and join us on our Monday night groups where we have these real in-depth conversations. All they need to do is just to go onto our website, changecreatorsa.com. At the bottom of the website is a place where they can leave their details. And then also a message to let us know they want to be a part of that group. We'll send them the details as well as a free copy of the book, Liftoff. Or they can email stanley@changecreatorsa.com. Yeah. And we'll give them the details and then come and have the real business conversations with us that we have every Monday night.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Aubrey, it would feel like you take so long to narrate the said points to the extent progress is compromised or some of us lose track of Stanley's thought process. Stanley, how do we deal with that? It's the same person who wrote to me yesterday to say that, you know, I take too long to sort of paraphrase or to how do we deal with that? Should I take a less active participation in the conversation that you and I are having? I really don't know how to handle that.
Aubrey, what I would say to you, I would say what Bob Proctor, my mentor, taught me. He said too many people go too wide and they don't go deep enough. What I love about the way that you do things is, Aubrey, you help us go deep. If you take just this one thing tonight, we could actually talk for the next month just about this concept if we really keep going deeper and deeper. I love this. I love the way that you, I mean, if it wasn't for you, I think 90% of what I say would not be understood by our listeners. So I think it's really important for you to keep doing what you're doing and for us to go deep into these conversations. Otherwise, all they're going to do is just leave us with a sense that we heard something that made sense, but it doesn't touch us deep down. It's only when things touch us deep that things really do start to shift for us. So I would say continue doing. I think you do a fantastic job.
Stanley Beckett, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Much appreciated.